You're listening to audio from Liberty Church Coomera. For more information about our family of churches, visit us online at liberty.church.
It is good to gather and worship Jesus this morning. If I haven't met you before, my name is Darren. I have the privilege of, it was like a clap, but it wasn't for me, I don't think. You're excited. Thank you, Matt, for being excited. If I haven't met you, my name's Darren. I have the pastor here at Liberty. And if you're joining us for the first time, you were coming in at the end of our series through the book of Ecclesiastes. So I'll try and give us a bit of a summary of where we're at, but we're nearly at the end. Look, we were going to frame this thing out for 4 weeks, but we're gonna bring it back in just 2 more weeks. So and some of you, they all said amen. Okay, some of you have you've kind of felt like Ecclesiastes is like the TV series Lost. Both maybe the title and how to make sense of what the heck is going on in that show and in this series. Sometimes working your way through Ecclesiastes has kind of been like driving through a fog. You can't really see what the end of the street looks like. It's hard to kind of pay attention. All you can see is just in front of you, and what's just in front of you is also pretty confusing. Ecclesiastes forces us in a fast-paced world to slow down. Ecclesiastes forces us to deal with questions that actually niggle us inside, but that we don't often address, and we medicate with life's good things. Ecclesiastes is, for some of us, has been uncomfortable. Ecclesiastes, for some of us, has been quite miserable. We've probably felt this preacher, this teacher's observations, and like, this is miserable. Like, this is really sad and bad and terrible. And some of us have seen the hope and light through it as we've heard the contrasting good news of the gospel as compared to Qohelet's teaching. And that's the key to this understanding this book. When we're presenting Qohelet's teaching, he doesn't have the final word. His words are being presented to us by a father instructing his son, saying, listen to these words, but I'm going to tell you something about these words. And next week, we'll be able to give him all the airtime we need to wrap this whole thing up. So I want you to imagine today, use your imagination with me, that this is our second last hang with Qohelet. I was chatting with Sam this week, and we were wondering whether Qohelet would be a good hang or not. Well, he's the kind of guy you want to spend a Friday afternoon with, kicking things around and ideas, and we decided that'd be pretty miserable, but it'd be a fun friend to have. So imagine we're with him in our second last hang. What's he going to say? What does he have for us today? Well, he's going to expose us to the reality that we really don't know much and that we can't control anything. And if you're perceptive, you think, hey, we've explored this before. And you're right. Ecclesiastes is like a spiral staircase that continues to walk around. We are getting higher, but we are seeing the same things. Some, for us, it feels repetitive. But if you're anything like me, you're might be a slow learner. And so he wants to speak to us about a couple things. Reality that we don't know much and we can't control anything. Now, not knowing much can be bliss at times, can't it? Ignorance can be bliss. Just not knowing how everything kind of works, you're kind of freed up from all the stresses of it. But it can also be really painful when you don't know how things work, particularly when it comes to God. When you've got big questions about God and life and meaning and purpose, how to make sense of that whole thing, that can be at times rather painful. Some of us feel somewhere, have experienced questions and doubts around Christianity. And it can sit somewhere between uncomfortable and perhaps even at times isolating. And depending on your church experience, it will depend whether those questions and doubts that you have about God and his goodness and the way the world works are either a safe space to discuss and explore, or they are wiped away and a thin veneer of certainty is given. Well, having questions isn't wrong. In fact, I think some things in life are very hard to make sense of. Some things in life are really hard to reconcile. We learned that last week. It's okay to live with questions, but here's my hope. My hope is that whilst you may live with questions, that by God's grace, you would die as Christians. Live with questions. That's okay. But die as Christians. Look beyond your own wisdom to the wisdom of God. So when we don't know much and we can't control anything, we're invited to trust God and doubt our own wisdom. So the hang begins in verse 1 of chapter 9. Gehelet starts and he says, "But all this I laid to heart, examining it all, how the righteous and the wise and the deeds are in the hand of God." He starts talking about this same event that's going to happen to everybody, and it is death. You think to yourself, "Oh, Gehelet, not again. Not death again." And Gehelet can't help but begin to summarize what he said so far. He says, firstly, listen, the problem with death is death seems to wipe out any gain you make in life. So when I build Lego with Dawson, we build it up. Wyatt comes across and just smashes it, and it's gone. Any gain we had is gone because death, that great leveler, death, that great foe, comes and wipes it out. Not a metaphor for my son Wyatt, just a picture for us on death. Yet we said that our work will actually matter. That what is done in this life offered by faith to God will count for eternity. Gehelet says, "Well, what about death? The problem with death is that the wicked people don't seem to get punished in time. And so how do we know whether there will be justice or not? It looks like this world is an unjust world." And we said, "Well, we know that Jesus is going to bring justice. He's defeated death on the cross. He's risen again. He's ascended to heaven, and he will be judge over all the earth. He will deal with the problem of evil." Well, Gehelet looks at us and says, "Well, the third problem I have about death is that death comes for both the righteous and the wicked. So you tell me, what is the point of being good? If the same event happens to everybody, why be good?" And that's what he tells us here. He is sure about one thing, and he's unsure about something else. He's sure that our deeds will be left in God's hands. See that? At the end of verse 1, how the righteous and the wise and the deeds are in the hand of God. But what he's unsure is the outcome. Whether it is love or hate, man does not know, both are before him. So I picture Gehelet kind of reluctantly clapping along in Sunday school to the song, "He's got the whole wide world in his hands." He's kind of in the corner clapping as if this truth that God has the whole world in his hands is a wonderful thing to keep him comfortable. He finds no comfort in it because he doesn't know God. He doesn't know whether God's actions towards him will be favorable or not, whether his deeds will be met with love or hate. He's unsure. He's frustrated. And listen, living with those kind of questions, when you are not sure how God feels towards you, can be very difficult. It can be very tough. Have you ever felt that way? Unsure what God's disposition is like towards you. Whether you are justified in his sight, or whether you still remain under some of his wrath. Whether, if you were to boil it down, he likes you or not. Gehelet's not sure. He says it's hard to tell who's under the curse and who's under a blessing because death comes to wipe them all out. How can you tell? Verse 2, he says, it is the same for all, since the same event happens to the righteous and the wicked, the good and the evil, to the clean and the unclean, to him who sacrifices and to him who does not sacrifice. As the good one is, so is the sinner, and he who swears as he who shuns an oath. He basically says, how do you know? Earthquake in Turkey recently, houses collapsed both on sinner and saint. Coronavirus has been indiscriminate with who it takes out, both believer and the thief. Gehelet finds this frustrating. Why has God made it this way? I kind of picture him having the bumper sticker: "Eat well, stay fit, die anyway. Death's coming, that evil foe. Death, that grand leveler, And he says, there's nothing you can do about it, so why bother? If a person's behavior doesn't seem to affect the way God treats them, well, why behave good? See, good deeds, we kind of know this, traditional wisdom, good deeds are meant to lead to a good life and prosperity. But for Kehelet, he says, roll the dice, you're not sure what you're going to get, which leads him to the conclusion and the implication of the question, can God be trusted? How do I know if it will work out well for me? He's not sure. And so you ask Kehelet, he said, man, well, if you're unsure of death and what happens, what is the point then of being alive? Well, Kehelet gives you some more chipper news. He says this, verse 4, but he who is joined with all the living has hope, for a living dog is better than a dead lion. So if you stop there, you think, hey, that's nice. Well, we love dogs in our society. We practically worship them. But people who have taken 2 months of gathering in church to stay home to look after their puppy, worshiping their little animals. But that wasn't the case for Israelites. No, dogs were the scum. Dogs were attributed to Sheol in the afterlife. They're a terrible, dirty thing. And so Kehelet is kind of sarcastically saying, oh yeah, living, man, it is good to be a dog. At least you're alive. Rather be a living dog than a dead lion. Why? What are the benefits, he says, of living? Look what he says. For the living know that they will die. Gee, he's got a good pros and cons list. The dead know nothing, and they have no more reward. For the memory of them is forgotten. Their love and their hate and their envy have already perished, and forever they have no more share in all that is done under the sun. So you lean into Kehelet and you say, so what's the advantage? Well, the advantage is you know that your time is coming. Because once that time comes, there is no more thoughts, no more knowledge, no more anything. For now, you get to live. It's kind of like the person when you're having a really bad day that comes along and says, hey, at least you're alive. And you're thinking, yeah, alive in this miserable world. Alive with this miserable problem. Gee, it's good to be a living dog, isn't it? Better than a dead lion. You start to pick up on Kehelet's sarcasm. You start to pick up on his irony. You start to pick up here's a guy who's got a bit of a chip on his shoulder. He says, yes, living gives you access to life's passions, like joy, to which we all felt warm, but it also gives you open to passions like envy and hate. Life is not bitter and sweet for Kehelet. It is simply bittersweet. Life is painful. It is difficult. Then you die. Death is coming unannounced. And for him, unlike Santa, it doesn't matter if you have been naughty or nice. You don't know what will come your way. Now, hearing him once again, you get a bit tired of his pessimistic outlook. You've been spending time with Kehelet now for several weeks. And you're thinking, Kehelet, you've got to chipper up. You've got to perk up. And you start to realize once again, and you start to recognize a lot earlier that Kehelet doesn't see the whole picture, does he? He has a limited view on what he's working with. And he says, in this limited view, these are the conclusions that I come to. However, life is not a small zoomed in lens, but rather wide. And Kehelet does not see the wide lens. So what comfort might we have for him concerning the Christian story around death? On Wednesday, I attended a funeral for one of my neighbors who passed away last week. His name was Malcolm. He attended our church for a little while, and he lost his battle to cancer. It was a sobering service. It was a joyful service. He was quite the character. I missed Malcolm. Malcolm's gone. And there was a statement that they read, this refrain that kept coming up, how Malcolm has now passed from life to life. He's in his Savior's arms. He will receive the reward for his actions. He put his faith and trust in Jesus. He knows that the work of his hands were in the hands of the Lord. His evil deeds were laid upon the cross by Christ's hands, who was nailed there. And so his evil deeds have been cleared. And the righteousness of God has been given to him. And so he gets to pass from life to life. It's the wonderful hope of the Christian story. Trusting that there is life beyond death. That our lives won't end in meaningless oblivion. That how we live now does actually matter. And that by putting your faith and trust in God, what he has revealed through his word by his spirit, you can have hope. Life after life. By God's mercy, as 1 Peter 3:4 says, we will be born again to a living hope through the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead, to an inheritance that is imperishable, undefiled, and unfading. Friends, better to be alive with Christ than to be dead without him. All of this escapes Kohelet, of course. He says, how can you be certain? How can you tell? That's not been my experience. How does he reconcile the despairing enigma of life that he sees with yet some hints of the sheer beauty and goodness that he also observes? That's where he gets to then in verse 7. You see that? He says, go, eat your bread with joy and drink your wine with a merry heart, for God has already approved what you do. And you're listening to Kohelet and you're thinking, we've heard you teach on this. These are your seize the day carpe diem moments where you present to us the great gifts of life that we are to enjoy and soak up whilst we can, if we can, for the limited joy that we can. He speaks of contentment. Go eat your bread with joy. He speaks of comfort. Let your garments be always white. Let not oil be lacking on your head. He speaks of companionship. Enjoy life with the wife whom you love. He speaks of career. Whatever your hand finds to do, do it with all your might. Kohelet says, if you can't figure out the difficulties and the complexities and the reality that death is coming and pressing upon all of us, you need to live it up. Bring out the wine. Get your dress shoes on. Get the best outfits. Lather up in oil, which you and I don't want to do, but we don't live in a hot, arid country and climate, because we now have air conditioning. He's the kind of guy that would say to them, could you quote Cat Stevens, he would say, hey, find a girl, settle down. If you want, you can marry. Enjoy life with the wife whom you love and listen, work hard, pour yourself into it. That's what life's all about. If you're not sure how to deal with the tensions in life, just live it up. You're taken back. Because once again, Kohelet's words seem so convincing. You think, hey, I could get on board with this. I think I could live it up a little bit. I'd like to drink wine and party and have a good time with a spouse. This sounds like it's a part. It sounds like Kohelet's really chipper. Until again, you lean in closer and you say, just run that by me one more time, Kohelet. What are you suggesting here? You'll notice that things become clearer. Yes, he does say enjoy life with the wife whom you love, followed by all the days of your vain life. Your vain, empty, absurd life. Enjoy your spouse. Yes, he does say, find fulfillment in toil and work. But just so you know, there is no work or thought or knowledge or wisdom in Sheol to which you are going. It's like he says to contestants on the block, yes, renovate, build, go for it. But at any moment, Scott can come down with a bulldozer and take it all away. Please, work hard. You can see his tension, can't you? This is the first time he's kind of kept a gap between the despairing enigmas of life and the amazing, pure joy of enjoying what you can. And here, it's as if the tensions are now crashing. Enjoy your love life, your vain life, crashing together. The tension's unbearable. It's kind of exploding up. Grab what good whilst you can. Listen, the reality of death is out of your hands. And the reality of enjoyment is out of your hands too. It's up to God. If he wills, you'll get it. But if you don't, well, too bad. Such enjoyment, says Trent Longman, Two is a momentary respite from the tragedy and evil of the present world. No more, no less. This tension is thick. And you're hanging out with Qehelet, and there's a listener who's been listening into your conversation while you've been talking. And this listener comes in and says, "Hey, I heard you guys talking about things. Sounds like you're having a bit of a mental exercise here. What's going on?" And the friend listens, this listener overhears what you've been talking about, and he says to you, "Qehelet, you're tremendously pessimistic about life. Let me tell you how things are. I think I've got a pretty good grip on life. I have a plan. I'm going to have a good life. I'm going to study well. I'm going to get a job. I'm going to have a career. I'm going to find a spouse, buy a house, and retire. I'm going to create investment schemes that where I don't have to work and money comes my way." Qehelet gives you a glance, the kind of glance that says, "Oh, we've had this conversation before." In fact, Qehelet's had this conversation hundreds of times. He takes a big breath, invites the listener in and says, "Come grab a seat. Let me tell you how your wise living won't guarantee success." It's like the anti-public speaker, motivational speaker. Qehelet says to him, "Look, three things really quick you need to understand that you will not be guaranteed a successful life. Number one, time and chance are against you. Number two, wisdom doesn't work. And number three, life is unpredictable and uncontrollable." You're listening on and you think, "Qehelet, what do you mean by those three statements?" Qehelet says, "I don't have much time. What I'm going to do is cover them really quickly, so work with me." You listen in closely and you see that he starts poking holes at conventional wisdom. Look with me in verse 11 of chapter 9. Verse 11, he says, "Again, I saw that under the sun, the race is not to the swift, nor the battle to the strong, nor the bread to the wise, nor riches to the intelligent, nor favor to those with knowledge, but time and chance happen to them all." Qehelet says, "Listen, Usain Bolt loses. The Avengers all die. Bill Gates needs food stamps. Elon Musk is on Centrelink, and Yoda's wisdom doesn't even get him a job at the local school." So you can take your conventional wisdom, but I'm showing you that it just doesn't always work that way. The outcome is not what you expected, is it? Your friend who was so happy about his plans of life is kind of confused. What do you mean? A plus B should equal C. Work hard, find a job that's fulfilling, find a family, and be able to enjoy life. "Well, not the case," says Qehelet. "Why? Because life happens. Life happens. Life is unpredictable. Life is uncontrollable. And because death is coming in the midst of life, and you just do not know when your time will come. You'll be like a little fish caught in a snare," he says next. And the problem is, many of us live off a wrong idea, a mechanical idea that if I act a certain way, it will guarantee a certain outcome. We call this the character consequence idea. Proverbs does teach this. If you are generous with your money, you will have money to be generous with others. If you work hard, save lots, you will have provision. If you be kind to others, others will be kind to you. There's a general sense in which character and consequence flow, but it doesn't always guarantee it. In fact, such a mechanical view doesn't allow life in a broken world to happen. The princess doesn't always get rescued. The heroes don't always win, and the bad guy sometimes overcomes. He says, "You don't know when you get caught up in a snare." See that? Death's coming. Or a bird caught in a trap. We were fishing. Such a weird statement to say because I never fish. We were a couple of the future elders and I were on a retreat about 2 months ago, and they were fishing. I was providing the biltong as the bait hook. And so we're fishing and we're trying to catch things, and in about a minute we caught an eel. And it was thrilling to try and reel this eel in. And we got this eel and we caught it and we threw it back. And then we're like, let's get another one. So on goes the biltong because it's working. We chuck it out. And guess what happened? Another little nibble. And so I'm like, this is my catch. And so we start rolling. We got a hand reel. We're at a little cabin and a lake. And we're reeling this thing in. And it's all going good. And then there's this sudden sad moment when we realized that we didn't catch an eel, but we caught a turtle. Could you imagine being that turtle that day? Just cruising around the pond. No worries. Great life ahead. Swimming up with his little turtle buddies. A little bit of food comes. Almost like a gift from heaven. Biltong. Gee, this is expensive. Grabs a hold. Earns a lip piercing for life. And we felt terrible. We've just hooked a turtle. So we catch and release and sent it back. Now, if you have a soul, you care for that turtle, right? But here's what's funny. You and I think that a turtle should not deserve that outcome. An eel, by all means, get hooked. But not a turtle. Turtle. That's not what you want. That, my friends, is the character consequence paradigm. And it's so ingrained in us that when there are diversions away from it, we can struggle to reconcile it, struggle to make sense of it. And that's Kohelet's problem. He just simply sees that A plus B should always equal C, and if there's ever an exception to the rule, the whole rule collapses. He's the kind of guy, if you invite him to go skydiving, he would say no. Because 15 years ago, I heard a story about a guy's parachute didn't go off and his spare parachute didn't go off either. And because that happened to him, the whole skydiving thing, it's all dangerous. Everybody's going to die from skydiving. An exception to the rule for him undermines the whole thing. He reads Proverbs wrong. He reads biblical wisdom wrong. Proverbs understood that there are these paradoxes. It understood that sometimes things don't, A plus B doesn't always equal C. And when it does give character consequence kind of themes, like trust God and may go well from you, it is speaking about generally and long term, not individual and short term. General patterns may be discerned, but many particular events may be unjust, irrational, and ultimately inscrutable. That is life, because life happens. Kohelet doesn't want to live by faith. He wants to live by what he sees and what he's experienced. And because he's been dealt a bad hand, he proclaims judgment on it all. It's all a waste, Havel. Maybe some of us, like Kohelet, fail to see this too. Maybe we fail to see the enigmas of life. Maybe we fail to see that A plus B doesn't always equal C. Maybe some of us hold God accountable for how we've perceived his actions to have been unjust. Because our experience didn't go well, God hasn't done well. We let the exception to the rule become our rule, and as a result, we end up rejecting God's rule. Here's some examples that I've heard. I tried dating Christian boys. There's none around. That's why I looked elsewhere. I tried giving generously and regularly, but I didn't have enough to spend for myself. So I'm going to keep it for me and look after me for now. I tried letting God deal with my pain, but it didn't go away. So I'm going to sort this out on my own. I tried trusting God with my life, but he didn't give me what I want, so I'm going elsewhere. I tried being comfortable at church, but I often felt uncomfortable, so I'm just going to follow Jesus with my own family for a while. Examples where we have let our wisdom and experience become the determining factor on God and on others. When we don't exercise faith along the way, we end up living by our own rule and reign, ignoring God. This was Kohelet's problem, and perhaps to some of ours today. Well, we go back to our hang with Qehelet. He noticed we daydreamed off for a moment. And we're back there talking with him. He says, quickly, there's two other reasons. He says, secondly, wisdom doesn't work. He tells a story in verse 13 and 17 of chapter 9, about a poor wise man who delivers a city from a powerful king, which is awesome. But then after the crisis is over, everybody doesn't listen to the wise man and they despise him. So wisdom has some value, but if no one listens to the wise one, what value is there? Verse 18 shows us that wisdom is quite vulnerable to even the smallest of attacks. Verse 18, wisdom is better than weapons of war, but one sinner destroys much good. He shares a proverb to explain what he means. Dead flies, verse 1 of chapter 10. Dead flies make the perfume's ointment give off a stench. So a little folly outweighs wisdom and honor. You might have heard one bad apple ruins the barrel. You can have a class of children, 30 kids behaving, but if there's one little terror, the whole lesson itself can go up in flames. That's what Qehelet observes. Fools, a little folly completely undermines wisdom for him, particularly if the leadership isn't full. So chapters 10, verses 2 to 7 says a foolish leader can turn the whole world upside down. Slaves can end up riding on horses. Rich and princes can end up walking and sitting in low places. When folly reigns, listen, wisdom doesn't work. The listener is taken back. He says, but I will be wise. I will avoid error. I know how to beat the system. Qehelet gives you that glance again, perhaps feeling weary of having to answer such objections. He says, listen, life is uncontrollable, unpredictable. No matter how wise you are, it won't guarantee success. That's what he gets at later on. He says, listen, perhaps you'll use your expert skill to dig a hole. Well done. But then let's say you fall into the hole by accident. What's the point of being an expert in digging holes if you end up falling in one? Or let's say you use your building skills to renovate a house. Well done. But what happens when you break through the wall and your snake bites you? Where's your skill then? Or let's say you're cutting stone or chopping wood. That's literally an accident waiting to happen. Accidents still happen. And for Qehelet, he sees the accidents of life unavoidable and uncontrollable, and doesn't matter how wise you are, you may fall victim to it. People don't just get what they deserve. Sometimes they get dealt a bad hand. It simply is. For him, it underrides his trust in traditional wisdom. It shatters it. It renders life absurd. The listener says, give me an example specifically. He says, okay, chapter 10, verse 10. He says, this is an example of how the whole wisdom thing doesn't work out. If the iron is blunt and one doesn't sharpen the edge, he must use more strength. But wisdom helps one to succeed. Ah, the listener says, so I'll be wise and I'll use expert knowledge and sharpen the blade. Qehelet says, I'm not finished yet. If the serpent bites before it's charmed, there is no advantage to the charmer. Ah, your friend, the listener says, we're back to snakes again. What's his point? So it's fantastic to be an expert in snake charming, but if a snake bites you before you've charmed it, what's the point of being an expert? What practical advantage is there in actually being wise? If accidents happen, so yes, sharpen your axe if you want to chop down wood, but just remember, when you chop wood, you could possibly endanger your life. Qehelet takes the wisdom and says, it's worthless. The listener says, fair point. Verse 19, Qehelet says, listen, money answers everything. You wonder, money answers everything? Yeah, well, it gives you access to live it up, the carpe diem. I mean, you can't be a poor person living in carpe diem, can you? Soaking up the good times, letting the oil pouring wine. Wine isn't as accessible as it is today, back then as it is today. Verse 19, money answers everything. Therefore, it should push you towards trade and investment. However, you don't really know what's going to happen or if you'll succeed, but something is better than nothing, even if success isn't guaranteed. And Qehelet, you just look at him and say, Qehelet, Tell me that most profound insight. And so Qehelet listens and he says, listen to this insight. The clouds are full of rain, they empty themselves on the earth. And if a tree falls to the south or to the north, in the place where the tree falls, there it will lie. Boom. Tree falls. Where it falls, it shall stay. Qehelet says, rain is inevitable. Can't control it. He says, tree falling is random. You can't predict it. So just as we are, reality is out of your control, and there are limits on what you can know, there are therefore limits on wisdom. He says, humans are essentially ignorant. We don't really know much, and we can't really control anything. So if you can live it up whilst you can, go for it. And what happens here, as you're listening to Qehelet, you start to hear him be truly honest about how he sees wisdom and God working together. And he makes this acknowledgement that the reality of limited wisdom is connected to the limited work about God. As you do not know, verse 5 in chapter 11, as you do not know the way the Spirit comes to the bones in the womb of a woman with child, so you do not know the work of God who makes everything. Don't miss what Qehelet just said. He just said, just as things are in life that you don't fully understand, you will never know what God is up to. He looks at the limited scope of life and says, because this doesn't make sense, what God is doing out there doesn't make sense either. And he doesn't say this in a comforting way. He says this in a confronting way. In the morning, verse 6, sow your seed, in the evening, withhold not your hand, for you do not know which will prosper, this or that, or whether both alike will be good. He says, you don't know if God's going to look after you or not. You don't know what's going to happen, accidents will come your way or not. Better hedge your bets, go for it if you can. Try and live it up. Once again, we see Qehelet's failings. This teacher sounds so wise, but he says, I can determine what God's doing out there in the world, and I determine that what he's doing doesn't add up. Someone's going to live it up. How do you feel when you're not sure if God is for you or against you? Whether you are blessed by him or cursed by him. When you're not sure if God can be trusted or whether he is good. That's Qehelet. Do you understand why Qehelet finds life despairing? Vanity? Absurd? That's a difficult way to live life. That's a difficult way to experience life. And he thinks he's on the right path. But he's not exercising faith. Seeking but never finding, looking but never satisfied. Now, here's why this matters. If, like Qehelet, we reject God's truths as revealed through Scripture by the Spirit, if we reject God's view on things, we don't move to a neutral spot. We move to a different path altogether. No longer pursuing God's way, but our own. We then have to devise our own systems of right or wrong, of good and bad. We devise our own standards, our own paths. You cannot avoid paths. You will be on a path. And what happens is, as we reject God's ways and don't live by faith, we end up trying to hold God accountable to our standards. And then we hold others accountable to our standards. We are in the one. We are in the determining seat of what's right and what's wrong. Interestingly, we've progressed so far to be back at the beginning of when it all went wrong in creation. The serpent came and said, if you eat this, if you reject God's ways, listen, you'll be able to know good and evil. That is the ultimate lie, that human beings with finite wisdom would be able to be determiners of what is right and wrong and stand in judgment over God. The thing about paths is we're always on a path. It's either a path that leads to life or it's a path that leads to death. God doesn't want us just to stay on the path of death. He's come to announce to us to walk the path of life. And he announces it through not just his words in scripture. He came, the words, God's words throughout history came and took on flesh. A living being, a human person, Jesus Christ, came to walk the human path. He came to walk on a path in a world that doesn't add up. Where his friends like Lazarus die. Where his disciples who he poured his life into betray him. When it all hits the fan. He comes and announces good news to people who've been broken, oppressed. People stuck under the absurdities of life. Blessed are the poor. Blessed are those who mourn. Blessed are those who are persecuted. Blessed are the downtrodden. He comes to minister to all the people who feel the tensions and realities that life is difficult. But he comes to say life is difficult. But if you are with me, when you die, you shall be raised to new life. So Jesus wanted to give. Gave his life to show the path towards life. And he's given us every reason to trust him. And he has given us no reason to doubt him. It's okay to ask questions. It's okay to have doubts. It's okay to not try and fully grasp what's going on in the world. But we can either walk our own path, figuring it out with our limited wisdom, outside of God's word and outside of God's people. Or we can bring those doubts and questions and queries and lay them before God and say, God, would you help me in my unbelief? Help me to know a way forward. When we don't really know much, we're invited to trust the one who knows it all. When we can't really control anything, we're invited to trust the one who controls all things. So, okay to live with questions, my prayer as we conclude today and then as we conclude next week is that we may all die as Christians, having exercised faith in God. Bring your questions to him. Don't be afraid of the doubts. A question, I can't remember who said it. The purpose of having an open mind is like having an open mouth. The goal is to close it of something of substance. God's given us something substantial in his word. Well, our second last hang with Qohelet is over. You found it somewhat intriguing. The listener who was beside you has got some things to think about. And you say to Qohelet, do you want to have one last final hang? Qohelet says yes. Same time next week. Let's pray.